Well, you can tell he's going to go full tilt professor on you with a full page of notes. It's been my custom over the years in some form or fashion to put together a series of thoughts and meditations during the seasons of Lent and Advent. And this is the first Sunday in Lent, and I'm on the schedule between now and Easter to preach four of the Sundays in this season. And I thought, well, that fits because we have four gospel narratives. We have four written witnesses to the life, love, and meaning of Jesus' life in the evangelists, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They are all similar in the sense that they tell a lot of the same stories, but their scope and content, their audience, and their purpose is unique. Each is quite different in lots of profound ways. So I thought each of the four Sundays that I will be here in the season of Lent, I will talk about the Holy Gospels according to Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John. And that is an important order, for Mark, though it appears second in the chronology in our scriptures, is the first written. Originally, I think scholars thought that Mark had written sort of the cliff notes to Matthew's gospel. It turns out it's the other way around. Mark's was written first. It had a kind of simple essence that Matthew used and added to, as did Luke. And John is something altogether different. And so we'll go through this Sunday by Sunday, trying to understand the gospel as it was written for the people for whom it was written, and see how that might apply today. So today, the Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. It was written somewhat before 70 AD, which is when the Jerusalem temple fell. And we think it was written by a character mentioned twice in the book of Acts, which, as we'll learn in a couple weeks, the Acts of the Apostles is actually St. Luke's second book. It's sort of the sequel to his gospel. And there's a character in there, John, called Mark, who was apparently a disciple of Peter, listened to and traveled with the early apostles, and based his gospel, now according to St. Mark, on the sermons of St. Peter. There are a couple of fascinating, unique, and constitutive features to Mark's gospel, not only what it is, but what it leaves out. Immediately, there is no Christmas story in Mark's gospel. No shepherds, no manger, no mother, no star. The gospel begins with nine verses that describes the coming of John the Baptist. And John the Baptist is sort of the last of the quasi-Old Testament prophets. So we get nine verses of John the Baptist, and then we have these words regarding Jesus. In those days, Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. And when he came up out of the water, immediately he saw the heavens opened and the Spirit descending upon him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, "Thou art my beloved Son, with thee I am well pleased." So that's how Mark relates the message of Christmas. Jesus is the Son of God. Only there's no birth to that effect. We simply have a voice from the heaven saying, "This is my Son, listen to him." And that's generated a rather fascinating theology about the life of Jesus. The fact that the earliest gospel introduces Jesus in this way has brought about a doctrine of Jesus' adoption into sonship. We really don't know who he was from Nazareth, other than as soon as he's baptized, kind of like we're baptized too, he was called to be God's Son and ultimately the Savior of the world. Well, where did he come from? There's an even more sort of much less well-known and I think fascinating sidelight to Jesus' birth, given the fact that he could have been adopted. Sociologists of religion of little note, maybe in part from as a result of this insight, noted that young girls in the ancient world, in this part of the ancient world, were extraordinarily vulnerable to Roman soldiers. And it is possible, even plausible to imagine, that Mary's condition of being with child was the result of that. Now, again, not well known, pretty shocking to a lot of people, but it does invite the question that speaks to troubled people. What can God do with the mess in our world? The vulnerability of young girls to soldiers, the adoption of Jesus into sonship. All of that is simply raised by the way in which the Holy Gospel according to St. Mark begins. The second feature of Mark's Gospel that's somewhat unique is a doctrine that's now referred to as the Messianic Secret. Throughout the Gospel, Jesus himself says, "Don't tell anyone who I am." One of the most constitutive features of the life of the disciples is Peter's confession, where they're having this discussion of who Jesus is. And Jesus says to Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" And he says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." In Mark, Jesus says, "Tell no one what he just said." Now, it's even more intriguing that in the Gospel according to St. Mark, the demons know who he is. There's a verse in Mark's first chapter, verse 34. The demons understood who he was, and they fled. He casts out demons, and they understand who he is, and then they leave. So the demons get it, the disciples don't fully get it. And for reasons that are largely mysterious, Jesus wants him to keep it a secret. It's referred to as the Messianic Secret. Look it up. So we have no Christmas story, we have the Messianic Secret, and we have, thirdly, uniquely in Mark, the imminent apocalypse. Mark's Gospel, chapter 13, has a long narrative about the signs of the end of time. And in it, toward the end, he even says, "This generation will not pass away before all of these things happen." And both Matthew and Luke pick that up. So there's this apocalyptic feature to all three of the first three Gospels that is reminiscent of the book of Daniel in the Old Testament, and also the end of the New Testament, the book of Revelation, the great apocalypse. It's called the little apocalypse. Well, in Mark, there's one other little feature to this. The word that appears in Jesus' baptism narrative, the word immediately. Immediately the heavens were opened. In Greek, that word is euthys, and it means immediately, or behold, or watch out. Mark uses that word 41 times in the shortest of the Gospels. Luke uses it 8 times. Matthew, never. John, 3 times. So we've got this not only apocalyptic message, this sense of immediacy and urgency, such that it is argued by theologians that the people in Jesus' time, and even the apostles, were of the mind that Jesus' second coming would happen in their lifetime. So that's the third feature that's more explicit in Mark than anywhere else. No Christmas story, the adoptionism idea, the Messianic Secret, don't tell anybody, even though the demons know, and this sort of imminent apocalypse. Finally, and these are Lenten themes, of course, Jesus' death and resurrection are told in Mark uniquely different. Last Lent, I think I did a series on the words that Jesus said from the cross, or the phrases and so on, the 7 last words, as they're sometimes referred to. Well, you need all 4 Gospels to get them. And in Mark's Gospel, Jesus says from the cross one thing and one thing only, and it's quite remarkable, as it were. Jesus goes through the trial and the humiliation, the crown of thorns, the beating and so on. He's on the cross and is silent until at the very end of his life he says one thing: "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Unique to Mark, Jesus dies abandoned and alone and forsaken. I think that's important in that if we're to believe Jesus experiences everything we can know, a sense of abandonment and being forsaken and afraid, well, it's useful to know that's where Jesus was in a way. There's others that have argued maybe Jesus himself didn't fully understand what God had called him to do. This notion of who is the Messiah and what it's about remains perhaps even somewhat lost and mysterious on Jesus himself. And then there's the resurrection. Mark's gospel ends in a unique way. Crucifixion happens, Joseph of Arimathea and others place him in the tomb, and then the women come a day later when it's now safe, as it were, after the Sabbath to finish the burial rite. They see the stone rolled away, They see Jesus' body missing and an angel in the tomb that says, "Why do you seek the dead among the living? He is not here. Go tell the disciples he is risen." And Mark's gospel closes with the last sentence to the effect, "The women ran from the tomb afraid and told no one." Period. It's the end of Mark's gospel. Now, there are resurrection appearances that show up in the gospel according to St. Mark, but they're tacked on later. The original version of Mark's gospel ends with an angel speaking to the women, telling them to spread the word. They are frightened, speechless, run away, and tell no one. Mark's gospel ends with mystery. I think there are two things to take away from that. First, Mark's sense of urgency and the value and the blessing, really, of that mystery. Urgency in the sense that the disciples thought the world would end in their lifetime. Well, that's not likely to happen for us. It hasn't happened in 2,000 years. But our lives will end, and we know that. And in comparative terms, it doesn't take all that long for a life to begin and to end. So perhaps there's a sense of urgency just in our own lifetime to be about what Jesus was mostly about. Our lives can end on any given day, from an accident, from a sudden illness, from a natural disaster, tragically at the hand of others, as we have seen so dramatically this week. So there's an urgency to embody the story, the urgency to be about what Jesus gives us the chance to do. If you're going to give up anything for Lent, try this. Give up the revenge fantasy that I know we've all got about somebody. The next time they do this, I'm going to do this, this, that, and the other thing, and we've got the plan. Give that up. It's not worth it. It saps energy that can be directed to charity, to learning something, to never let love go without saying. You buy Valentine cards, and they always say, "Well, I never say this often enough, but I'm saying it." Well, say it to somebody. Embody it. The urgency to give up what hurts us, to put forward what makes us strong. And finally, I think, get a hold of this mystery of the angel saying, "He's risen." Just go tell him that and figure out what it means. The disciples don't get it. The demons know and are afraid. Jesus may not fully know himself what he's all about. Those are the themes in Mark. But Mark wrote it 30 or 40 years after Jesus' life, and he knows his readers know who Jesus is and what he means. And that's us too. We are his readers. There's this mystery and the reality of the resurrection and angels who say, "His spirit remains." Who's gotten you through deep soup? Who has embodied for you and walked you out of the tomb with hope and strength? That's an angel that says to you, "He is risen." Who's taught you something that's enabled you to be an angel for others? Who knows you exactly as you are and loves you anyway? And who says so? That's the angel in the tomb that says, "He is risen. Go tell him and figure out what it means." Urgency, mystery, live the story. He is risen. The Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. Amen.